Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, chatting with Jordan Roiburn. We're going to be looking at the charts for precious metals, as well as probably some of the ETFs that follow the underlying more larger stocks here. Jordan is the founder and editor of the Daily Gold. Now, Jordan, I want to start off with the correction, I guess, the drop that we saw on Monday in gold and silver. It came right at the market open, and quite frankly, prices just kind of plateaued. I think gold was down around $60 or $70. Silver was down well over a dollar. I think it was about 5% down on the day. But ever since that weakness on Monday, mostly we can say that the price has kind of moved sideways for both gold and silver. So Jordan, when you see a week start off like it did with a big drop on some decent volume, it wasn't huge volume, but then there wasn't much follow through Tuesday or Wednesday as we're talking right now. How do you view a move like that short term wise in those charts?
Well, I don't really think about it as far as how the week started. I think about it as far as, okay, looking at gold and silver, the Friday of the prior week, we had this bearish intraday reversal with nasty daily candles. But then gold and silver were able to continue to rally. Well, I shouldn't say continue, but they recovered immediately. And if you look at gold, gold peaked four trading days ago. I don't want to say it was a double top. Maybe if you're looking at an hourly chart, it could look a little similar to that. So that's what I'm seeing in the gold chart. You know, silver, you know, a little bit the same thing, although it didn't get close to 30. So, yeah, I mean, the market got really overbought. When we're looking at the miners the same day, you can still see those big reversal candles, those big red candles, and there was a little bit of a rally, you know, and then we had more selling. So I just see it as a little correction in the sector. Things got really, really overbought in both the metals and the miners. And that's a good thing. That's exactly what you want to see, especially after a major breakout in gold, which is, as we know, is the, you know, the grandfather of the entire sector. So I don't know how much more we can read into it other than that.
Well, Jordan, just to that point, from a big picture standpoint, you've been writing to your subscribers for a while and mentioning that after a 13-year basing in that cup and handle pattern and breakout, that, yeah, there may be some pullbacks, and we need to see some pullbacks occasionally. You don't want just a parabolic move higher, but that this is still setting up much larger targets. So in the overall scheme of things, yes, it's been a rough start to the week, but it hasn't completely fallen out of bed here. But maybe just speak to the big picture view that you still have of where these markets are headed, not just gold, but maybe silver and the mining stocks as well.
Yeah, if we think about gold, I mean, let's reconsider the measured upside targets. I mean, the first one I think is 2,500. I did hear someone I respect mention 2,450, and we did peak pretty close to 2,450. So maybe that is the first of these measured upside targets. I mean, looking at the cup and handle, the target's about 3,000. I know that the way that others have measured it, you know, they've had 2,750 or 2,800. So it's an unconventional cup and handle pattern. So depending on the way you measure it, you know, you can get 2,800 or 3,000. Then you have the log target, which is 4,000. So this is a sector that's poised to move dramatically higher, I think, over the quarters ahead and over the next couple of years. And if you look at when the market is strong and it's running, and we're talking about gold here, it typically comes back to the 50-day moving average. And so gold, I mean, I'm looking at a week or two ago, I mean, just even right now, you know, the 50-day moving average is just hitting 2,200. So there's still a little bit of ways that gold could fall to test that moving average. And so if you're zooming out and you're looking at when gold's really strong and it's running, that's where it corrects to. So gold was getting really, not dangerously overbought, but it just had really, really strong momentum. So, you know, these things don't go straight up. A pullback is natural. You don't want to chase things that have gone straight up, or you look at the charts and it looks like a rhino horn when you're looking at the miners. So, you know, I would think just use some common sense. And it is possible that the metals and miners could just consolidate, correct a little bit more here for another month or two to kind of digest the recent overbought condition. So it's really nothing to worry about. Yeah, we are likely in a new secular bull market. We'll see at the end of the month. I mean, I'm looking at my gold against my 60-40 total return indicator. And at the end of last week, like if we could hold that level, it would give us a potential breakout in that relationship. Like the same signal that we got, the same confirmation signal that we got in 2002, 1972. So that's something to look forward to later on. Like if we get, like once we start getting trouble in the economy and the stock market, you know, that's when this bull market will really, really accelerate. And I think that's coming at some point, you know, maybe not this year, but it could be next year.
Jordan, can you give us a little bit more color on what this GDX rhino horn formation is? Because right now GDX ran up to pretty much a 52-week high, but then immediately reversed. That's right around that 35 and change level, but it's also staying above that 32 level, which was pretty strong resistance on the way up over the last couple of years. So one, rhino horn, what is that? And two, it's kind of in this area right here where it's so close to breaking out, but also may have just set up a support zone.
Yeah, well, I think about rhino horns more on the individual stocks. And so we're talking about a short term, like you're looking at a daily chart. You think about something that starts moving up, and then the angle of ascent gets to be stronger. It's 45 degrees, and then it just gets sharper and sharper. And it then at the end of the move, like it's so sharp that the move is almost straight up. So it looks like a rhino horn, like the horn on a rhinoceros. You know, I'm not a veterinarian or zoologist or whatever. But if you think about the end of its horn, like it's almost so steep that like at the end of it, it looks like, and maybe in some cases it's even the edge of it is like pointing back. Like that's how sharp the angle of ascent of a rhino horn can be. So when we're just think about that in terms of these minor stock charts, when you're looking at, you know, 6 month, 4 month, your 3 month chart, and just the angle of ascent becomes so sharp that at the end of it, it's almost straight up. And so when you see that kind of formation, the market that you're looking at, it becomes so overbought that what happens is you're probably going to have a correction, or you could have like a bullish consolidation, like a bull flag or some kind of triangle develop. But it's just a general important point. Even if it's something you really, really love and you want to buy, you don't want to chase those because it's kind of like a terminal move in a short-term sense. It just becomes so sharp and steep that it needs time to rest.
Yeah, Jordan, you don't want to chase when they get that overbought and when they're that parabolic on the way up. They do correct, but you know, you've been messaging some of your subscribers that during the pullbacks, they really haven't been as extreme. Like even on Monday when we saw gold and silver giving up 3 and 5% respectively, a lot of the mining stocks you were mentioning in your portfolio, and I noticed the same thing in mine, didn't have that bad of a correction. Even the ETFs didn't correct that bad. So let's also just discuss that while some of those rhino horns may correct back down, the pullbacks in a bull market are not going to be like what we've seen the last 3 to 4 years.
No, absolutely not. And also, you'll start to see this in juniors. And I remember this in 2009 when gold ran up to 1,000 and then it consolidated for 5 or 6 months. But money was coming into the juniors during that consolidation in gold before it broke 1,000. And the juniors actually made higher highs before gold broke out. So I'm not saying we're going to see the exact same thing this time, but the psychology of the market is shifting because gold has made the major breakout. You know, it hit 2,400, it's at 2,300, wherever it is. This is a huge difference from below 2,100. And so even if gold's, you know, digesting and correcting a little bit, that's not going to change the fact that the psychology of investors is slowly going to improve, even as the market is correcting, just because they're so slow, like they're still adopting to the fact that gold made this major breakout and, you know, the miners are really starting to move. And so it's kind of a nuanced view. You get that breakout, you know, the bigger stocks, the larger, they've moved, you know, they've made really good moves so far, but then there's still too many investors that are now, they're just slowly starting to catch on and they're more interested in buying miners more, buying juniors more. And so that catch up in their psychology overrides the fact that, okay, well, gold got really overbought and it needs to correct, you know, $200 or $150 from here. And so I think that's why you can see these stocks hold up really, really well, even though gold and silver are correcting and the miners are correcting as well. And also the last thing I'll mention, you know, quality, like the, you'll see the high quality juniors, they won't sell off as much because there's people waiting to buy those immediately versus, you know, maybe if you have something that's lower quality, you maybe have some fundamental problems. It's more of an optionality play. Those are the ones that can, they can give up those, the gains really fast in a correction. But the higher quality ones, no, like the, those are the ones that, you know, if they're not too overbought, you know, they can just consolidate bullishly around the previous highs.
Now, Jordan, what about the other markets to watch? You even alluded to the fact that U.S. markets, if those start to break down, which we have seen some weakness this month, that could draw more attention to this sector, to the sectors that are doing better, which have been more of the hard assets and commodities. What markets do we need to watch? What do we need to watch for in these levels to, I guess, further prove that money could very well be rotating even more so into precious metals and commodities?
I would say gold against the S&P 500. And also, and you can't watch this because this is my ratio, I put the data together, but gold against the total return of a 60-40 portfolio. Again, this gave confirming new secular bull market signals in 1972 and 2002. And I think there's a decent chance we could get the same confirming signal if gold holds up pretty well over the next week or so. So that to me, you know, as well as gold against the S&P, because gold against the stock market, that's 60% of that relationship anyway. So those are the things that I'm really looking at. And, you know, once you get more weakness in the economy or the stock market, then more capital from there will start to move into gold and precious metals. And that will turbocharge the gains in this new fledgling bull market for gold.
Well, Jordan, just as you look at your own portfolio, I know you can't share names because those are reserved for your subscribers, but just the general concepts of what you're doing. You'd mentioned in the past being interested in growth-oriented gold producers and maybe some of the more advanced developers that have a real runway to being in production in the near term. But when you talked about silver, you mentioned that you were more interested in the optionality of it rather than going after the producers or the developers because you thought it may behave a little differently, the silver stocks, than the gold stocks. Could you maybe break down that point? Because we had a couple of people emailing us asking, curious about what you were doing with the silver miners and the optionality component.
Yeah, well, the first thing is because silver in a bull market, silver will move more than gold, then you get more torque on the optionality side from silver. So that's a big reason why I favor silver over gold optionality plays. And so but by optionality, we're talking about basically for silver, a big low-grade deposit. And at the same time, you know, you're looking at what's the market cap, you know, of the company. So what's it trading at against the ounces in the ground? You know, there's a certain level that I like looking at as far as the resource. You know, I don't, obviously we're looking at low grade, but I don't like grades that are basically near zero. That's, you know, way too low grade for me. So I'm looking at those things. Again, I'm looking at market cap. I also look at, okay, what was this valued at when the silver market peaked in 21? And, you know, I think my two favorite optionality plays, they were valued at like, I don't know, 80 cents or 90 cents per ounce on the ground. So if you get silver going to 50, like let's say in 2 years, you know, those ounces could be maybe like $3 or $4 per ounce in the ground. And right now, if you're looking at what those are trading at, I think one of them was like under 20 cents. So they're basically just option plays on the price of silver. But also at the same time, you know, there might be other silver companies that are not quite optionality plays that still have a really big resource. So you could look at what were those valued at the previous peak and then, you know, project forward. I mean, it's, you know, if you have a really high grade or a really good deposit and it was trading at $2, $3, $4 an ounce at the last silver peak, you know, could that be at $8, $9, $10 per ounce at $50 silver? Like, sure, that's not that far-fetched. So that's some of the analysis I like to do with silver. I mean, back in the 2000s, up until 2009, you had so many good small junior producers. And now you really don't have that anymore. Like there's not, in my opinion, like there's just not that many. Like there's some good ones, but their market caps are like at a billion or over a billion. So I'd love to be able to find, you know, like a junior silver producer that has pretty good assets that's trading at two, three, 400 million market cap. I don't know. There might be one or two out there. So these are how I think about silver.
Yeah, there just aren't that many small silver producers out there in the world, really. It's a tough game, I think, to bring that silver mine into production and then also continue to get funding for it due to just how, I guess, restrained that silver price has been. But hey, Jordan, you gave us some insights there on kind of what you're looking at and also just looking back what these stocks market cap wise did carry. And you do need to always look at market cap too, because we do have dilution that comes into these stocks. So it's not just on a share price basis. It is more focused on kind of market cap and value for ounces in the ground. Jordan, thanks for taking time with us today. We'll chat with you hopefully again next week. You can follow along with Jordan on his website, The Daily Gold, which we will link below. Jordan, thanks again for your time.